This episode of Road Dirt is brought to you by Mimi and Moto, children's motorcycling books. The holidays and Christmas are fast approaching, and it's time to start thinking about presents for the kids in your life. Our friends Nancy and Mark, creators of the Mimi and Moto book series, would like you to join their mission to get more children excited about motorcycle riding. You can visit them at mimiandmoto.com. That's MIMIAND MOTO.com, mimiandmoto.com. They've already got a couple of great books out that have been really good sellers for them in recent years. The Adventures of Mimi and Moto, and Mimi and Moto Ride the Alphabet, along with t-shirts, onesies, ornaments, plushes, and things like that. They've got another one coming out, looks like in the coming year. It's going to be called Mimi and Moto's Magic Meteors, First Gear. Mimi and Moto are a pair of motorcycle riding monkeys in their book series, and they're really entertaining. So little kids are definitely enjoying these, and I think whole families will enjoy them as well. Let's pass on the love for motorcycling to the next generation, and what better way to do it than with children's books that the kids will enjoy. MimiandMoto.com. Welcome to Road Dirt, the podcast of Road Dirt Motorcycle Media and RoadDirt.tv, your down-home grassroots motorcycle brand covering what we like to call ride life, hashtag ride life, if you will. This is Rob Brooks, your host. Thanks for tuning in. And we're going to share part two of a fun Halloween series that we've been doing here on the podcast, written by our West Coast, Southern California writer, Joshua Placa, who recently completed kind of a tour of the spooky towns of the Old West, swinging through parts of Tucson, Bisbee, and Tombstone, Arizona. If you haven't had a chance yet, you definitely need to listen to part one, Haunted Highways into the Arizona Ghostlands. And we published that one last Friday, so give that a listen. And hope you enjoy this episode. It's called Haunted Highways Part 2, Discovering Tombstone's Undead. Tombstone, Arizona is about 75 miles south of Tucson, down I-10 and southeast on Route 80. Or, of course, if you want to avoid some super slab, you can go 83 south to 82 east to 80 south. And it's become a tourism mecca of sorts, inspired by the tagline, quote, "The town too tough to die." A closer look, though, reveals it also offers a dusty home for ghosts too tough to stay dead. Tombstone remains a living monument to a romantic, if murderous, era. Its clapboard buildings and wooden sidewalks stir up images of cowboy heroes and villains the likes of Wyatt Earp, Bat Masterson, Doc Holliday, and Johnny Ringo, as well as the Clanton and McClary clans, now taking up permanent residence on Boot Hill, where moldering graves are marked by rotting wooden tombstones. Their historic shootout near the OK Corral is known around the world. The Wild West is preserved in the town's original 1880s buildings. The celluloid stuff you saw on TV is here to experience live and undead. As a silver mining boomtown, Tombstone attracted every sort of cowboy, hustler, rustler, investor, gunfighter, gambler, and prospector. As hardscrabble a life as that was, women had it even harder. Opportunities were few. School teacher, saloon girl, wife, or prostitute were about the only choices. If widowed, which was fairly common, women were often forced to sell their bodies or starve. As they aged, they were pushed further and further toward the town's outskirts. Many committed suicide. Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday, among many others, married or lived with what were called, quote-unquote, soiled doves as they drifted from one boomtown to the next. Vice and lawlessness ran rampant, but everyone was too busy trying to dig a fortune out of the town to care much. Even the renowned Earp and his brothers Morgan, James, Virgil, and the lesser-known Warren, the youngest Earp, came to Tombstone to make money, not clean up the town. Wyatt was later appointed deputy sheriff with ambitions to become sheriff, a position that doubled as tax collector, which earned 10% of Pima County's tax revenue. For the sheriff, that would top $1 million in today's money per year in commission. Some citizens, however, sought treasures of the heart, or close enough. The Tombstone Bordello B&B, Bed and Breakfast, was among the working cat houses in town, which saw more than its share of carnal love and spilled blood. Unlike other locations where the air can feel heavy and with just a little imagination menacing, the Tombstone Bordello Bed and Breakfast doesn't feel at all threatening. In fact, the love sold here seems to have left some change. Valerie and I stayed in a room predominantly decorated by Standard Brothel Red, which is quite appropriate, actually. On the dresser was a well-used guest journal. Some guests experienced nothing but a pleasant stay and a fine breakfast, but others had written something more. Reports of midnight disturbances of the spectral kind filled the journal. Most described being touched on the leg or arm while in bed. Some felt a distinct tug. After an unexplained tug on her leg, one woman wrote someone or something got into bed with her. Her and her mother, who shared the room, leaped out of their beds and ran out the door, never to return. The journal went on to describe a comforting feeling, quote unquote, a protective energy, so to speak, which permeated the house, all except for one. A guest felt hands tightening around her neck, uncomfortable but not choking. This lasted several minutes, according to the guest, a long time to feel strangled, and yet, for some reason, she didn't believe she was at serious risk. Some believe this was the spirit of Dutch Annie, who reportedly was strangled by an unsatisfied customer. Other sightings include human-shaped mists, some in period dress gowns, drifting from one room to the next, a phantom cowboy entering through a window and vanishing through a door one time, an employee who lost their balance on the steep indoor stairs but was steadied by an invisible force, and the sound of gunshots behind the B&B, echoes of a minor shot to death in an argument over one of the girls. And who says love doesn't kill slowly? The property was built sometime between 1881 and 1888, according to incomplete records. Big Nose Kate, outlaw, gambler, saloon, and brothel owner, but best remembered for being Doc Holliday's sometime girlfriend and later his common-law wife, originally owned the Tombstone Bordello. The building was later moved a couple hundred feet to its present location, refurbished a time or two, including additions. The red porch lights that still burn are a nice touch. Add a few ladies in period costumes, someone banging on the antique piano keys, and rot-gut cocktails being served on silver trays, and it would feel like you just stepped back in time. Service prices are posted on the walls. The Bordello B&B is managed now by the warm and welcoming Mary, who also bakes while her husband Will does the cooking. The hearty breakfast there is not to be missed, nor are Mary's homemade muffins and cookies. She leaves cookies out for the guests every night, or for the ghost, whoever gets them first. So ditch your low-carb diet for your stay. It's well worth it. The heart of Tombstone is about a 5-minute walk away. After asking the spirits to show themselves, or at least say something, taking photos in the dark, and other proven ghost hunting measures, sad to say, neither Valerie nor I felt nary a tug or pull, breath on the neck, floating orb, disembodied voice, or even bony hands around our throats. Valerie, however, did report a sinister snoring that had no natural explanation. Tombstone's haunts don't end here. The Birdcage Theater, once a clamorous and lustful casino and dance hall, operated for only 9 years from 1881 to 1889. But what a wild and wicked run it had. Operating 24 hours a day, every day for nearly a decade, exotic and can-can dancers and national headliners performed on stage as prostitutes plied their trade in the 14 birdcage cribs that lined the walls of the theater. It was a scene of at least 16 gunfights, leaving some 140 bullet holes in the floors, walls, and ceilings. According to some witnesses, a few unlucky patrons are still waiting for the next show. While sitting at the original card table used by gamblers long since dead, a palpably eerie feeling came over me. What a great biker bar this would have been. While there is so much paranormal activity in Tombstone, why is there? Aside from being the scene of many a murder or otherwise violent death, some locals believe the honeycomb of silver mines beneath the town acts as a kind of spectral battery, charging up otherwise dormant or resting souls and entities of unknown origin or intent. Why only some of us can see, hear, or feel them while others cannot may have something to do with an individual's particular quote-unquote positive charge, attracting the ghost's negative charge. We're both beings powered one way or another by electricity, so this theory kind of makes some good sense, much as any other. I wandered about town late at night, my motorcycle boots striking tombstones, clapboard sidewalks, echoing, I fancied, the footsteps of Earp, Masterson, and the drunken swagger of Holiday. I passed what quickly became our favorite and preferred eatery, the Longhorn Restaurant, originally was called the Bucket of Blood Saloon, then the once bawdy Crystal Palace and Big Nose Kate's Saloon, now all pretty tame, at least in broad daylight. I walked among ghosts dressed in their Western finery and ghosts in the making, still throwing back whiskeys in the bar rooms. Next time, the long road home on an Indian. Joshua Placa. Well, we appreciate that second episode of Haunted Highways, Part 2, into the ghostly origins and happenings in the town of Tombstone. Discovering Tombstone's undead. Now, on Monday, we'll publish another one on Halloween Day, the wrap-up in this three-part series, so stay tuned for that. And also be sure to check out Joshua's story at our online magazine, roaddirt.tv. Look up both of the Haunted Highways articles. You'll find them on there with plenty of photos and links to other sites and photographs and everything. Check that out if you will. And check us out on YouTube as well. We've got a YouTube channel, Road Dirt TV, with videos, motorcycle reviews, ride reviews, race coverage, things like that. Hope you'll check that out as well. We're also on three social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All of those are Road Dirt TV. In fact, the only thing really that's not Road Dirt TV is our Spotify music playlist. It's called Road Dirt Classics. You can find that over there. About 25 hours worth of music that we like to listen to that Joshua and his friend were listening to as they rode the Wild West back a few weeks ago. So hope you'll check that out as well. Thanks for tuning in. This is Rob with Road Dirt. Until next time, ride life. We want to thank Mimi and Moto.com for their sponsorship of this episode of Road Dirt, the podcast. You can find out more about their children's motorcycling books at MimiandMoto.com.